I looked on the Webcomic Beacon and I saw, ooh, 6 comments. Wow, cool.
Now presenting the Webcomic Beacon Newscast.
Welcome one and all to the Webcomic Beacon episode 180. This is the newscast for April 17th, 2011. I'm your host, Ross Scott of The System, which can be found at systemcomic.com. With me today on the show, our special guest of the week, the venerable, I don't even know what venerable means. I really should look these things up first.
I think it means I'm made of venison.
Awesome. The venison full Caldwell Tanner of lol.com, LOLDWELL.com. Does that mean you do comics about funny home furnishings?
That I dwell in? Is that what you're saying?
Lol dwell,
yes. I thought it was more like I lolled well at it. You know, it's kind of like the D is the past tense. That was always how I read it.
Gotcha.
Also, it's the stupidest pun off my name for people that didn't get that. Yeah, special guest. I didn't realize that I was a special guest. I thought I was just a guest.
All our guests are special. We're all special snowflakes, as it turns out.
Wow.
So, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I had nothing. I was just reveling in the fact that I was a snowflake. First time anyone's called me that.
Sure, why not? I'm happy to say that I know Caldwell from... his work online, of course, but we actually worked together on the See Something, Cite Something, So You Found Something Cool on the Internet chart.
That's
You know, totally awesome.
The most epic flowchart ever to be conceived.
Wait a minute, you guys made that? I didn't know. I found it somewhere that didn't have any references on it.
Oh, no. That totally ruins the point.
What, you guys made that? Saw that shit on Funny Junk.
Yeah, that was really us that over that thing. I have a Caldwell, I gotta make you a copy. I have a 3-foot version of it hanging on my wall. It's like a wall.
Whoa, cool.
Yeah, it's great.
3 feet.
It's 3 feet. Well, it's only a foot wide, but it's the thing's so long that, you know.
We have a life size Darth Vader cutout in our apartment.
Nice.
So if I can get one of those, it'd be great because I can just like give it to him and he can like hold it up. I feel like it has more of a point that way. If Darth Vader's telling you that you need to cite your stuff on the internet, more important that way. You guys are?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes it takes us a little while to kind of figure out a cadence, you know. Skype being what it is. All right, well, let me introduce the other people on the show today, and then we'll move into the first article. Also with us today, Eric from Exern, which is EXIERN.com, who also puts together all of the research for all the articles that we see every week. Hey, Eric, and thanks for doing all that work.
No problem. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, duh, of course. also this week, as always, we have our editor-in-chief of the Webcomic Beacon, the one and only Fess of PSIWebcomic.com. Hey, Fess.
Hey, me.
Hey. Is Alex joining us?
She should be. Yeah? There she is.
Oh. I'm sneaking on the show this week.
Oh, there she
Who's
is.
Who's that?
So long. This is Alex Heberling of Alex's Guide, which can be found at alexsguide.net, a last-minute addition to today's show. Yay!
Yay! I'm back!
Yeah, how you been, Alex?
It's been a crazy month, but I'm good.
Awesome. Okay, well, let's dive into it. We've got a lot to cover.
Did we say that Eric's on the show?
Yes, we did.
All right, cool. Then I am going to sit this one out.
Did I mention I'm on the show? Okay, we did. Okay, good. All right. So actually, speaking of Eric, I would like to introduce real quick a story that Eric has been following up himself about Visa purging furry sites from their client base. So, Eric, maybe if you could give everyone a little backstory on what you've discovered.
All right. So we're going to go through this real quick. Visa has been purging all sites that have, as they termed it, non-human characters in adult sites. Their definition of an adult site is any site that has nudity. Their addition of non-human characters is pretty much anything that would classify as a furry. I discovered this for my own self when I was submitting a site that had mermaids on it, and mermaids were close enough to furries for Visa to purge it. I did some research into this. Now, Visa's purging started back in 2003 when the Bush administration passed the Child Protection Act, an act nominally to prevent child pornography. Visa has been using that act to periodically purge sites from their system. When that act was passed, they put in a $750 fee for all adult sites. And a $500 recurring fee, and required that all adult sites using their system have an annual review. Well, this year, in their annual review, they started getting rid of any adult sites that had anything to do with furries in them. And I got that confirmed by a number of site owners who run sites that are a little bit adult and do have content which would be considered in the furry context. Now, these are pretty mild sites. These are not sex sites. They are nudity, and then you have the cat girl, the fox person in the site. But that is considered a violation of Visa's rules. Now, according to what Visa has online, I researched this, they do not allow rape, child pornography, and bestiality. And it appears that they are classifying furry as bestiality. And this year, they have dumped a whole bunch of sites from their ranks. That is the flow of it. The other thing to note is Visa controls 40% of the credit card market and 60% of the debit card market. So when a site loses Visa, they lose a good portion of their income.
Hello, MasterCard.
MasterCard is much more laid back about.
Is it fair to say that we have the scoop on this? Because it sounds like I haven't heard anything about this. I really think we broke a story.
No, we broke a story here at the Webcomic Beacon. You hear it here first.
You heard it here first. All right. I like this more and more every minute. Scoop. We need like a sound effect.
You got scooped.
How about that?
Yeah,
sound
I don't
that,
know how like, often just... that's going to happen.
The sound that an ice cream scoop makes that has the little wire thing. Yeah.
There we go.
So this is something that is obviously kind of breaking right now, but if you think about it, this kind of relates a lot to a lot of online payment that's been denied, which we've seen a lot more recently as more people are accepting online payment and more companies are kind of becoming more discerning. We saw this with WikiLeaks and a lot of credit card companies not allowing payment for donations to WikiLeaks and things like that. Mm. And a lot of other sources recently and a lot of online gambling getting shut down. It seems like the wild west of online payment is starting to catch up with us just a little bit. So what do you guys think? Should Visa be allowed to do this kind of thing?
Well, first of all, I don't think that mermaids should be classified as furries. They're obviously scalies, which is an entire different subsect.
Well, it's non-human.
Need to make that clear.
It's all squick to me. So, but which is going to be a new comic, I think.
It's all squick.
Domain's already registered.
and perfect.
Yeah, man, I mean, I gotta say, like, classifying furries as bestiality just seems like such a kind of gaping generalization of what could be, just some naked people walking around. I mean, does anyone count Liberty Meadows as bestiality?
I don't think so. I don't know.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit? Because, you know, that's a chick making out with a rabbit. That doesn't count? Wouldn't that qualify? Or he's got so it's fine.
I really want to like talk to like a someone who claims to be like a furry science specialist, some sort of like their specialty. It's like Professor Foxcat. Yeah, they're a scientist, but they're also a furry.
Well, the real problem we have is no one knows what Visa is doing because they refuse to release their evaluation criteria. Not even people.
Sounds a lot like Google to me. I mean, we've heard that a lot from Google. Google Ads drops people left and right whenever they feel like it, and a lot of people have wondered about it. But when they drop you, and I know this problem, you know, from personal experience, when they drop you, they send you a thing that says, "Well, we're not allowed to tell you why we dropped you because that's part of our secret formula stuff. So trust us, we did it for a reason. You can appeal it, and then we'll tell you yes or no based on the appeal, but we won't tell you why we appealed it or why we said yes or no." So it's all behind this kind of magic box system where it's like, yep, the box said you can't do that. Sorry. But no one's allowed to see the box.
I mean, Google can do whatever they want. Did you see that they trapped Charlie Chaplin inside their Google logo recently? He's just chilling there. Jerks. They have control over the past now.
Oh, man.
It's getting worse. Looking out through the time.
By the way, I totally respect Google, my overlord. Since I'm four Google-related software at this very moment. So
we'll take a break from the podcast so that everyone
Ross
can...
Ross is like, please don't delete all my feeds.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll take a break so everyone... Delete. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Oh, go ahead, Colin.
I was just going to say we should take a break so that everyone can face California and pray to Google really quickly. Offer up a quick prayer on their four-color...
All right.
Feeling lucky.
Send all your hate mail to... Godwell.
Are there any other parts of the story? I mean, one other thing I'd just like to point out based on this story, that means that Visa is reading furry comics.
Visa is actually not reading furry comics. They have contracted out another company called Intercept to do these reviews.
Fitting name.
And so this is sort of where you kind of have to scratch your head, because someone somewhere in this system has gotten it in their head that they don't like furry comics, and they're going to purge the world of it by using Visa's rules. And where that's coming from, we have no idea. It could be someone at Intercept. It could be someone at Visa. But it's only in the United States, and this is only – so this regulation is only in the U.S.
Europe doesn't give a crap about furry comics.
Yeah.
Did you see the time in Tintin when Snowy and made out with Captain Haddock? Everyone's
saw it. And then Donald Duck. There's that whole Donald Duck, Uncle Scrooge, you know.
Right.
Shipping going on there.
Yeah,
I think it's more that Europe has more consumer protections, and they would be required to disclose what they're doing in Europe, where America is more business-friendly. So businesses can just sort of do what you said, the black box. We're doing this. We don't have to tell you. We're just dropping you. And if it destroys your business, too bad. And so this policy has only been in the United States since 2003. And that's when they've been doing it.
All right. So. Okay. Well, we're going to be trying to follow this story as best we can. If anyone out there has seen notice of this or has had it affect them personally, please do get in touch with us either via the comments on the Webcomic Beacon's website, which is, of course, webcomicbeacon.com. Tweet at us via any of our Twitter accounts. And also feel free to email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. We'll be trying to follow the story as best we can as it develops. Now, are there alternatives to Visa?
MasterCard. So,
Now, what about PayPal? Because I know, I mean, PayPal kind of accepts whatever, but does going through kind of a third-party system like PayPal still get affected?
PayPal dumped all adult sites in 2003. Mm. Yet again, the Bush administration came in here and scared the hell out of these card companies, saying that you're going to have to keep records of every single company you do business with, and most of them just dumped it. So PayPal dumped all adult content. You cannot have adult content on PayPal, according to their rules. Now, if you look on the website, you see that there are tons of adult sites that are on PayPal and using it. It's kind of a weird system where it's in the rules, but they don't shut you down unless someone reports you.
all under the table.
Yeah.
All right.
This mostly affects CC Bill and Veritol or whatever. The ones that work with adult sites. And we're going to be talking about payment options and funding options on the Webcomic Beacon after this, which will go into this story a little bit more, as well as other options that may be out there for some people anyway.
All right. So be sure to stay tuned to all the other shows here on the Webcomic Beacon Network to find out more information as the story develops. We'll move into the next article. Thanks, Eric, for doing all that legwork. That seems like something that could affect more of us than we would care to admit out loud. So, on to the next article. Photoshop, ever since touch tablets have been around, Photoshop has been kind of the thing that everyone's wondering about. Will Photoshop do something touch-related? And there's been a lot of touch-related art programs. There's been brushes and things like that. Now, Photoshop Touch will first be implemented in three official Adobe apps scheduled for May release, called Easel with a Z, Color, Lava, and Nav. Each app essentially transform your iPad into additional control device or surface for your desktop-based installation of Adobe Photoshop. This coming from GigaOhm.com, an article on there. And will be linked in the Webcomic Beacon's newscast links post. So be sure to check that out if you want to learn more. All three work a little bit differently. One will be directly only able to work with Photoshop and won't work on its own independently, ranging from there all the way to working independently on its own as a program. Still remember, though, that the biggest thing that everyone said about these tablets, they're not pressure sensitive. Now, do any of these artists on the call use tablets currently?
I do.
Oh, you mean like a Wacom tablet?
Yeah, like a Wacom.
Oh, I always forget that that's how it's pronounced. I hate that.
I've gone back and forth so many times. I just like saying Wacom.
I prefer Wacom because it sounds like a giant robot, but that's just me.
Sounds like an arcade game.
Wacom Defenders.
Wacom Gundam.
Wacom. Gundam Wacom.
So Caldwell, you use a Wacom tablet, right?
I do. Pretty much every day. I love it. It is if I were to be a wizard, it would be my familiar, I will say that.
Yeah, I've been using a tablet for almost 10 years actually.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'm really excited about this. I know everybody that I know has been looking for like a digital sketchbook sort of app.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I ever have a huge chunk of money to spend on an iPad, then I would definitely buy this app with it.
Now, I wonder, are they going to be increasing because I know there's a Photoshop app for like iPhones right now, which is just, it's just like touching up and color adjusting. I wonder if they're going to be increasing that or if they're going to, this is just focusing specifically on tablets.
Well, this one's focusing specifically on tablets as of now. It says the apps Adobe showed off in a couple different ways. Nav, which is one of the three, allows you to create a custom tool palette and also a color picker and zoom controls. You can flip through open Photoshop files and open files directly from your iPad in your desktop Photoshop installation. Nav is a pure companion app and doesn't exist independently of Photoshop on the desktop. Easel and Color Lava, on the other hand, both work with or without Photoshop itself. Easel is an independent iPad painting app that very accurately simulates physical paint media, if the demos are any indication. It works independently, but allows you to transfer your paintings to Photoshop at any resolution, which means you can resize
it
without any loss of quality. So I guess it must be vector-based or just accepted at a really high DPI. Color Lava, as the name suggests, is about creating color palettes and swatches and can later be synchronized with Photoshop or can be used in real time with Photoshop open.
I like how Adobe...
What they're talked about.
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I like how Adobe has taken the Pokemon approach to making products, where they have three different products with stupid sounding names, and you need all three of them if you want to be any good at it.
Yeah, man. I mean, that seems like a horrible idea, considering most tablets are bad about multitasking.
Oh, yeah.
To have three apps seems like a total kind of waste of resources.
Yeah, and they all seem like they're going to complement each other a little bit.
Yeah, but they also don't. I mean, so these are all kind of Adobe implemented and seem to be linked to third party. Is how the article describes. Mm-hmm. But none of these are saying, "Hey, we put Photoshop on a tablet." They're all saying, "Whoa, whoa, 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 whoa! You should still be buying a computer in Photoshop." But every once in a while, maybe you can use this tablet-y thing.
One day.
Yeah, one day. I mean, I would just love...
Baby steps.
I would just love if they would do a tablet that just turned the tablet into a mouse. I mean, it would pretty much turn it into a Wacom. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I've seen apps for the iPhone that kind of... Like, there was one called Air Mouse where you could use your iPhone as a mouse for your computer.
Right.
You know, if they had something like that that just... You already have the tablet, and now you're using it as a mouse for the screen. I mean, that would already be at least a pretty good use of a tablet.
Mm-hmm. I have to imagine that, like, Wacom, or like at least one of their competitors, is trying to work on like a tablet that's kind of like an iPad, but like, you know, with the pressure sensitivity that they
are so good. Where is Wacom? Where is Wacom in this tablet market? I mean,
I don't know.
I hope they're just like in their little underground Canadian bunkers and gonna and working on some awesome tablet that's just gonna blow me
I thought
away.
Wacom was British.
Are they British?
I thought so.
They're British.
They're
in their little British bunker.
We mentioned this a few newscasts ago. I don't think Ross Scott was here, but Asus EEE has a tablet out. Well, it's like a tablet PC, and there was a commercial somewhere with using Microsoft, and we mentioned it, and they showed ArtRage. I believe it was the program ArtRage, and this guy looks like he's playing World of Warcraft on it with like an external keyboard and a little mouse, and then picks it up, gives it to his daughter to draw on it, but you could tell there was no pressure sensitivity. So I mean, this is the year of tablets. Things are going to happen this year.
I just don't see why no one's done an app that, you know, it's touch. It's a touch interface, but then, if you have a pen, it can be pressure sensitive. You know, I mean, that seems like such an easy thing to do. It seems like it would be the killer art tablet. I mean, all artists I know would like that. I mean, tablets and in PCs have been around for years now. I know a lot of artists that have tried to use them, including some webcomic artists. I know Shortpacked, David Willis, for a long time was trying to do it on his laptop tablet. Has since kind of switched away from it. But I mean, I think all artists are like sitting here craving this.
Yeah,
and we just haven't quite ever been given what we want.
Yeah, the problem is artists. I mean, pressure sensitivity is expensive to produce. Yes. I mean, if you look at a Wacom tablet, they're about the price of a good computer themselves. Mm-hmm. And artists are poor, and this is not the market that these companies want to shoot for. They want cheap for rich, you know, rich people who have disposable income to spend on something stupid. You know, that's what they want. They don't want an artist who is going to probably sit in front of their computer anyway, so why build a tablet for them?
Fair enough. All right, well, we need to move on to the next article. If you have a Wacom wish list like we do, be sure to join us on the Webcomic Beacon's website. All right, Amazon... This another article from GigaOM is a article by talking about how ebooks and other digital downloaded content needs not a Netflix subscription model, but a Hulu subscription model with publishers working together to give out content and have it be ad supported. What does Hulu for eBooks mean? This is from the article. Book publishers themselves need to get together like NBC, Universal, Fox, and Disney and begin to offer their content, or at least some of their content, in both ad-supported and subscription offerings. Okay, you ask, why should they do that and not just let say, Google or Amazon instead? Unless I'm wrong, publishers are the only ones with big enough rights liberties of both new and catalog titles to package up in a variety of ways to make this idea interesting. In an agency model world, booksellers like Amazon can't adjust pricing as they see fit. Only the publisher can, which is why I have my doubts about startups like 24 Symbols. Do you guys see any interest in an ebook market?
I'm just picturing, like, you know how on Hulu, like, they'll kind of cater the ads to you and what you're, like, watching? I'm really just picturing, like, you opening up, like, Pride and Prejudice, and it's like, Pride and Prejudice, fueled by Mountain Dew, extreme literary blast. I think it'd be so great to see, like, them trying to integrate product, like, doing, like, almost, like, product placement, but, like, in text. I don't know, like, what their ad plans. I guess it'd probably be more like you'd, like, read a page, and then, like, one page would just have an ad on it, but... It would be very fun to see some product integration, especially in, like, Victorian novels.
Well, basically what they're proposing is, like, a new WowieO, right?
A new what?
A new WowieO.
Oh.
That was that ebook website from a few years ago that went belly up.
Yeah. It's a WowieO, or another way to look at it is, like, Spotify for music, where you can listen to whatever you want, whenever you want, and you just get ads every once in a while and around it. It's that sort of model. But this kind of relates to our next article about just how far ebooks have gotten. So we can also add this to the pile. Amazon is now selling more ebooks than paper books, according to an article found via the Daily Cartoonist, which links to an article on Business Insider talking about how in their latest quarterly profit sales call, they said that they're now selling more Kindle books than paperback books. Since the beginning of the year, for every 100 paperback books Amazon has sold, the company has sold 115 Kindle books. And also notice that their pricing for Kindles have consistently dropped to the point where it's been speculated that they might drop to the point of being free in the future. So... What? You take all that and you put it together, and it's the fucking future. There.
So you're saying that you'll be given a Kindle at birth. It's like how it works. It'll be just like, and then everyone will be assigned one
for preschool.
Given, it will be embedded into your optic nerve.
Yeah, okay.
It is freaky. I mean, like you say that, but like it seems like, you know, if kids are going to school and they're like, we're doing away with you know, paper books, then yeah, every kid will just like have a Kindle. And, like, that's where all your, like, books will be. Yeah, that seems to make sense. The future is, in fact, freaky.
Also, the U.S. Kindle store now has over 800,000 books, including new releases of 107 new releases and 107 of 112 New York Times bestsellers. Over 670,000 of these books are $9.99 or less, including 74 New York Times bestsellers. Millions of free, out-of-copyright, pre-1923 books are also available on the Kindle.
How much mermaid porn is on there, though?
Yeah, good question. also,
if they have mermaid porn there, then I'm going over there.
Also, when I scrolled down to the bottom, recommended for me was an article on how Nicolas Cage was arrested for drunken assault on wife's street. Which, what does that have to do with Amazon for Kindle? Thanks.
I was just going to say, my recommended thing is the prostitute who brought down Wayne Rooney says she slept with three other millionaire athletes.
Oh my gosh.
Hold on.
Yeah.
All right. Well, normally I'd pursue that a lot more, but we got a lot more to cover, so we'll forge forward. But keep that hot tip ready in case, because it's totally Webcock related. As fodder. So, Tokyo, we've covered Tokyo Pop a lot recently. Their new ventures into the app market, and also their redesign of their website that's going to be premiering. And this just in, they're going to be shutting down, or sorry, have shut down their U.S. offices.
Oh, no.
Oh, noes.
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. Just real quick. It's via, we get this information via Alan Gardner of the Daily Cartoonist, who gives us news of this. They announced on their Facebook page that they're closing their U.S. operations. The Beat reports that an earlier round of layoffs in February left the company with a mere 6 individuals.
Oof. I guess kids don't like the mangas anymore.
You know, that's just doesn't seem true. I mean, there's so much manga still. I mean, I know it kind of boomed, and there was kind of a huge speculative market, but I really didn't think it was, you know.
Maybe the manga bubble's bursting like the anime bubble did.
Uh-oh.
You know, because there was like a period of time where like Viz and all those American, you know, the domestic companies were just buying things and they weren't getting much funding from people actually buying the titles they were putting out. So they had to buy more things to see if they could get a hit and stuff like that.
But who will buy my amazing manga related comic story Jump Steppers DX? Like someone needs to purchase this property. It's really too bad.
The problem isn't that there isn't mangas anymore. The problem is that everyone is doing manga. So if you have an inefficient company, you're in trouble now, because you can't just say I'm doing manga and that's going to float my inefficient business practices.
That's the real question. I mean, I think a lot of stories have been floating around for artists for a long time about Tokyo Pop having issues. Do you think this is manga in general or Tokyo Pop in specific?
Sounds like it might be more Tokyo Pop. I'm not even sure what manga they release. Like what are their top sellers, or were they? Does anybody know off the top of their head?
They've released a lot of titles.
I mean,
I feel like
I'm not even sure where to start with that. I mean, they've released a ton. I know, aren't they the ones that put out Mega Tokyo?
Oh yeah, I think they are.
Yeah, they did for a while. Wikipedia has a list of Tokyo Pop publications if you want to go take a look at it.
I'll check it out. I just know that like Viz is the one that's always on like the bestseller list, because you've got like I think that like doesn't Viz do like Bleach and Naruto and the ones that are always like super well, like really good sellers? So I don't know. I mean, maybe it might just be their content.
Tokyo Pop also does have its share of known titles. There's Great Teacher Onizuka, Love Hina, Beck, Cardcaptor Sakura, Fruits Basket, Blame, Battle Royale, Battle Vixens, Loop of the Third, Mobile Suit Gundam. So, they do have their fair share of titles, and that was just a quick scan. There was an English language manga of Ghostbusters, which I didn't even know existed. I read that?
Mighty Ghost Captors DX is what it was called.
Oh, there's you go. You did have to collect them all. That's yeah. Wow, is Pokemon secretly Ghostbusters?
I think. Oh, I like to imagine that. I think the Ghostbusters could totally fit into the Pokemon universe because there's like so many ghost Pokemon. Oh man.
God, I never realized that.
I have to go.
This is our next scoop. Ghostbusters is Pokemon, because you break them down and then you put them in your little traps.
If you actually read some of the descriptions of the ghost Pokemon characters, you realize they're really creepy.
Yeah.
There's like this balloon-ish like one that, quote, like grasps at the hands of children to take them away when they grab it. It's like,
actually, this makes
sense. Steal children
because Professor Oak is dickless, so you know it totally fits for Ghostbusters. Okay, that was probably too specific for Ghostbusters.
I got it.
That was a stretch. I admit it. He doesn't work for the EPA, so
I'm just gonna be upset if I Google Ghostbusters Pokemon and I don't see a picture of Egon zapping a Gengar. That's it's going to be upset.
Yeah, that, or even like Ash getting slime.
Now Googling.
Oh, man. There's so many comics I want to make. Okay, we need to move on. Sorry. So now we're some quick discussions. There's a Japanese webcomic which started a couple years ago called Hetalia Axis Powers, which started as a Japanese webcomic and is now in now both an anime and a manga, but actually did start as a webcomic and is I guess the stories that's coming out via ToonZone.net is man, I'm totally missing the story here, except that they started as a webcomic. Oh man, isn't it, guys?
Ross, there's no story here. From ToonZone.net was simply a review of it, and doing some research on Wikipedia, I just found out that this is something that started in Japan as a webcomic, and within 2 years, it was a manga and a popular animated series, and it just hit me that's something that never happens in the U.S.
Yeah.
Facts.
Oh, God, the kids, they love Italia.
But it's not something that's never been discussed. I mean, Axe Cop and Dr. McNinja and ones like that have been approached, I know, by animation studios. It's not like that these things have never been discussed, but I think the market just isn't quite there in the same way.
Well things get optioned all the time. You just don't usually see anything happen for years.
Right.
The thing about like Hetalia and like just Japanese television in general is like the Hetalia things are just like 5 minute clips, which, and there's not really like, other than like online, there's not really a format for that in American television.
Right. Yeah. But if cosplay is any indication, this is a very popular thing. Because I know every con I go to, I see people dressed as Canada and stuff.
Yeah.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, they personify all the countries in that were basically involved in World War II, and it takes place around, kind of around World War II, as people. So you have like a U.S. person who represents the U.S. as a person. And person who represents Italy and a person who represents Germany and all that kind of stuff. It's really, it's a really interesting concept.
Very elaborate.
It's funny how like like all the backstories and all like the characters for each country are very elaborate, except for Italy, who just likes pasta. And that's the extent of its character. I don't know what the author has against Italy.
it's the Mario of
yeah.
The
it's a, yeah, I watched an episode a while back because it was one of those things where it's just like I kept seeing it everywhere and like at cons. I'm like, I guess I have to know what this is.
Yeah,
yeah, it's on. I believe it's on Hulu, so you can watch it there. I could only sit through one episode just because it happens to have everything about anime that I hate.
Yes,
but you know,
meaning
power to him.
Wait, where are the things about anime that you hate? Where are the things?
That's its own show.
Fair enough.
It was just a little too obnoxious and fast talking, and it's like, oh, yeah. God, duh.
All right, well, then we will move on to the next thing. Back to American webcomics. Dave Kellett of Sheldon is put out a copy of his latest book, which is up for a, which award is it? For an Eisner Award. Has put it available online as a 11.5 megabyte PDF that people can download in order to make sure that the people that can vote for the Eisner hopefully have actually read it. He said, losing solely because no one got a chance to read the book. He wishes to avoid losing solely because no one got a chance to read the book. And this article was found via comicsreporter.com. Have you guys read Sheldon at all ever?
Oh yeah.
I mean,
I've
love
read
it
here and there.
I've been remiss in it, but I'm definitely familiar with it. It's literature, right? That's the book. It's like all of his like literature cartoons kind of grouped together.
It's a lot of the literature based stuff. From what I understand, and I gotta admit, I haven't read the book. I do read the comic a lot. It's a collection kind of thing. With new material.
Cool.
Yeah. He seems like the kind of guy that puts new material into books.
It's a total webcomics move, though, to like just offer up a PDF of your book for free like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think you would see, a print cartoonist, not to like make that distinction, but I don't think you'd see a print cartoonist like doing something like that, being as generous.
Well, I mean, it's not like the work itself isn't already online because a lot of it is already on his website. Maybe it's not sorted the same way, mm-hmm. But you know, you're allowed to do that. So so he's got up this review copy. The book, by the way, is entitled Literature, Unsuccessfully Competing Against TV Since 1953, which is consideration for the best humor category.
Awesome.
Maybe a quick reminder on how the Eisners work. The Eisners are announced through isn't that the one that goes through SPX?
No, that's something different.
Oh, that's the
Eisners are usually. Oops. I mean, they rotate where they're announced. Last year they were at Baltimore Comic Con. I have no idea where they're going to be announced this year. Yep.
Yeah, they're at San Diego this year. But it is kind of an open. It's an open like voting kind of thing, and so this way it kind of makes it a lot more able to be voted on very openly.
Can anyone vote, or do you have to? What are the restrictions for voting?
You have to be a comic professional. Professional
count. So none of us. No.
No, we count. You make a webcomic, you count.
Interesting.
Technically, that means half the population of the planet counts right now. But
there is a best digital comic category, which includes The Abominable Charles Christopher, The Bean by Travis Hudson, Lackadaisy by Tracy Butler, Max Overreacts by Kanan Grail, and Zara's Paradise by Amir and Khalil. And we discussed those actually last week. So
tough choices.
Yeah. You have to self-submit. They have to be submitted. They don't go out looking. Anything that wins an Eisner has to be submitted. At least that's what it says on their rules.
Right.
Well, I just got my professional comics badge in the mail, so I'll be inspecting that and then submitting my my vote.
Nice.
It comes with a free monocle and a handkerchief to wave at my competitors.
Nice. And a newspaper to burn.
Yes. to light my pipe with.
Speaking of which,
really. No, go ahead.
Speaking of newspapers, the Village Voice has retroactively decided to pay their artists after a small scandal. The Village Voice did a comics issue recently where they hired for free a bunch of artists to do work for the issue, including Brendan Burford, Ted Rall, and Gary Groth. And now in the articles talks about how little they are paid, didn't pay them, and now thought, we're doing an article about how little they get paid and didn't pay them. Maybe we should pay them and have retroactively decided to pay them. Editor Tony Ortega put out a statement. I wanted to have a big special comics issue but had a limited budget. So in well-meaning effort to make this work, I asked some cartoonists to provide work without compensation. The last couple days, it's been pointed out to me quite clearly. In other words, it's been yelled at him very much that this is not the best way to help out the cartooning industry. The thing is, we're not a company that expects people to do work for free for the exposure, except they did. And I'm making this right. I'm paying all of the artists in the special issue and hopefully buying them beers and working with them again soon. Well, at least he knows that they all drink beer.
Seems like a happy ending.
Yeah, kind of.
I'll stick to my vodka.
It's great exposure. Sorry, what's that?
Exposure.
I said I'll stick with my vodka.
Yeah.
Jeez, it's like not even noon.
Yeah.
I work at night, so it's like.
Okay. Well. Now, have you guys ever gotten one of these? Like, would you like us to repost your work or use your work? Or draw something for us, but it's great exposure. Have you guys gotten them?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, I can't even draw, and I get those.
Oh, what are you gonna do, right?
I don't mind. If it's something I've already created, like if somebody wants to use like a comic or a chart and something, then I'm fine with that. Usually, if they credit it, but I definitely always steer clear of working for exposure. It's a hard thing to do, especially when you're starting out, to like avoid that.
Yeah, and think about it. I know in the graphic design industry it comes up a lot with spec work where people want you design before they pay you, and it becomes more like a competition and a contest than payment for services. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a blanket industry no-no, because like if enough people do it, then the industry standard of being asked to be paid for your work like dies.
Yeah.
Yeah. The weird thing about the Village Voice is they had an article in the Village Voice about how working for exposure reduced the value of comics while the Village Voice was having people work for exposure. So that's why they got in a lot of trouble on that one.
This just in, Pot calls Kettle Black.
Nicely.
Yeah. All right. Well, there's plenty more to read on that, and be sure to check out the link on the Webcomic Beacon's website. Some quick tidbits. Axe Cop seems to be referenced/featured in a cameo of a recent Power Girl cover for Up, Up, and Away Part 2, where Superman has a Tyrannosaurus Rex in a headlock that features chain guns for arms. Which looks surprisingly similar to Wexler, right? Wexler from Axe Cop.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome.
I guess
the raptor has an axe. He's a lumberjack raptor.
I think it could just be awesome coincidence. Maybe not. I feel like it's just like once you see that that dinosaur with chain gun arms, it's just hard to get out of your head. Like, so it could have just been a subconscious faux pas.
Oh, I'm sorry. I drew a dinosaur with chain gun arms.
Yeah, sue me. It's the most awesome thing in the world. I'm not going to say I'm sorry. Everybody should be drawing those.
It's different enough that I don't think it's meant maliciously at all. I think it's meant as homage, you know, and it kind of comes across that way by referencing it the way it does. Also, the pterodactyl has gloves and shoes that make him look like Mickey Mouse, which is amazing. All he needs is the red shorts, and it's firing laser beam eyes. Like, what has happened?
That's such a... There's so many covers where you look at it and go like, yep, comics, and that's definitely one of them.
Yeah. Oh, comics.
Comics, you crazy.
In 20 years, that's going to wind up on Super Dickory. You just know it.
Yeah, totally.
Amazing. All right, well, let's hit a few quick hits real quick, and we'll finish up the show. There's some links that we'll post to an academic survey being conducted about webcomic habits over on Comics Talk. Be sure to check that out and weigh in your vote, especially if you're a fan of webcomics. Show people how great we are. Some links on Scott McCloud's website to some new examples of the infinite canvas being explored, specifically by Shira Chan. And there's a link to her DeviantArt. And two things that aren't webcomic related but just kind of cool. How to make an interactive video on and post it on YouTube, which is in itself also a funny video. Did you guys see that? Because it actually is pretty hilarious.
I gotta check it out.
Via Chad, Matt, and Rob on YouTube. And finally, the periodic table of storytelling was posted on DeviantArt and has been making the rounds and is also pretty hilarious. So be sure to check out all that and more via the Webcomic Beacon and our website, webcomicbeacon.com, where you can find all of these links and all our other great shows. So with that, I guess we have to be wrapping up the show. Thanks to all of you for being on. Caldwell, it has been a pleasure. I hope you join us again soon.
It was great. I loved it.
Do you want to plug anything in particular that you're working on or doing or should show people?
I think... If you go to Loldwell, loldwell.com, that's got pretty much everything I'm working on, everything that's going on. And then I also work for College Humor. So go to collegehumor.com and click on every ad you see.
And
it's not hard.
You'll notice how Caldwell's work gets ripped off on Imgur all the time.
God bless you.
If you're a fan of podcasts, be sure to check out his awesome podcast, the Nightmare Shark Podcast.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Yeah, nightmareshark.com. Check it out. It's a podcast that my friend Henry Alexander and I do.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Thank you.
I listen. Oh.
You guys are great, though. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Also, thanks to Alex. Great to have you back.
Woohoo!
Be sure to check out Alex's guide over at alexsguide.net.
Tomorrow's comics involves Daleks.
Does it involve vodka or just the creation of it?
All my comics involve vodka, Ross.
Gotcha. vodka, Dalek vodka, the vodka that will exterminate your brain cells.
Nice. It's too good for you. And it exterminates your brain cells. It plungers out your brain. There we go. Eric, thanks for all of the work for putting everything together this week.
Thank you, Rob.
Yeah.
And thanks for being on the show, of course. And finally, Fess, could not do the show without you. Thanks, Fess.
No problem.
Awesome. So with that, we come to the end of yet another episode of the Webcomic Beacon. Thank you all so much for tuning into the newscast. This has been episode 180. Check us out. If you're on the Ustream, we do the Ustream, by the way, every show. We record Sundays at 11 Eastern. Be sure to join us.
Well, that time might change. We'll talk about it.
It might be to 10:45 or somewhere around there. But maybe if you show up at 11, you'll at least...
we'll tell you on the site.
Yeah. And by the way, thanks to everyone in the chat for turning in. Thanks to Burger, Becky, M. Scotter, and all seven of our guests.
Yay.
So thanks to all of them for joining us. And with that, it has been a pleasure. I've been Ross Scott, your host. Tune in next time when we'll hear Dr. Bob say... No. sorry.
Peanut butter and jelly.
Yes. Peanut butter and jelly, everyone. Have a great week. We'll see you next time.
Good night.
All right. Thanks for coming.
See you next time.
Bye, everyone.
Tune in for more at webcomicbeacon.com.